So many games. Boys, there's so many games.
Too many, arguably. Mm. Maybe.
So many.
There's a lot.
I'll there are say too that many much. Games.
There are a lot of games available right now, and I'm playing a lot of them. Not all of the ones that I thought I was going to be playing, but I'm playing a lot of games regardless, you know?
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Astrobot.
Okay, yeah.
Which I have not finished, I will note, because I was playing a ton of, and then I went out to Memphis. I'll talk about that later on in the show. And so I did not get the opportunity to finish Astrobot. And now I have come home and I'm playing other games. So I will get back around to Astrobot. But this game rules. Like, Astrobot is fantastic. I mean, PlayStation have done it. They've made a Mario. So Mario can be killed now, as is the desire of Shahid. Shahid, did you have something to do with this? did you get to your contacts at PlayStation to be like, create a good mascot? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Basically, 3 years before Jim Ryan stepped down, I gave him a call. I said, listen, these guys on Remaster, remember the show that we interviewed you for back in the day? They are constantly ribbing me about my desire to see Nintendo kill off Mario.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only way you're going to get it done is by, you know, that VR mascot you've just created, turn him into your mascot. Make a proper game that'll show Nintendo how it's done. And he kind of thought about it for a bit and he said, you know what, Shahid, you're absolutely right. That's what we're going to do. I had nothing to do with it.
I believe
God's
you did.
Sake.
I'm kind of loving this fan fiction.
This is fantastic. Yeah. And so I would like to thank you, Shahid, because this game rules. It rules so much. They really have done it.
I'm not going to cover it separately in my section. I'm just going to tell you right up.
Yeah.
I think this is the best PS5 game.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, is that a high bar to you know, like, that's... And I don't mean to poke fun at PlayStation, but, like, is it difficult to be the best game on PS5 today?
I mean, I think this is the PlayStation 5 game, right? Like,
yeah.
This is the one. Because I do think I actually believe Astrobot... Well, actually, you know what? Spider-Man 2 also rules, right?
Yeah.
So, like, those two together. But I feel like Astrobot is actually marking the, oh, no, this is when the games begin. Mm. Like, they had that state of play, and they showed Ghost of Yote, which looks so good and makes me think I should probably play Ghost of Tsushima, which I've never played. But I want to play Ghost of Yote, so I guess I should probably play Tsushima and see if I can handle that. Like, for some reason in my mind, I got Ghost of Tsushima and Sekiro mixed up.
Oh, that's two very different games to mix up.
And so I always thought, oh, that game's going to be too hard for me because FromSoft made it. But so maybe I should try Tsushima. I'm thinking about it. I think I'm going to go for it. I put it on my game track list. I'll get to it when I've got a gap, which I now may have a gap because I was really looking forward to Assassin's Creed, but that's now been pushed to February 2025. I think that's in part because Star Wars Outlaws kind of got some mid reviews. I was hoping for more. They're mid from that game, to be honest. And so I have actually not picked it up because even though I was looking forward to it, and I think part of that is like there are actually great games out right now. And so I'm kind of not going to quote unquote waste my time with something that is mid. But like I'm hoping to play Outlaws later still as well. Like it's still on my list as a game I'd like to play, but I didn't push stuff aside for it. Like I pushed Astrobot aside for a bit for Legends of Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Like that came out as we're recording this yesterday, and I picked that up and put a few hours into it, and that is a joy of a video game too, right? They're very different, but they're both very joyful. Like Astrobot, I find, just puts a smile on my face. It's just such a pleasure of a video game. Like I can't remember the last time I just felt this just pleasure from playing a game. Like the amount of mechanics that they have, it's just so fantastic. And the way they use all of the everything that the controller can do. And then Legend of Zelda is more of a pleasurable puzzling experience than I was expecting. Like, I was a little bit apprehensive of the like the Echoes mechanic, thinking that it might be a little bit complicated. But they actually do a very good job, I think, of what I've played so far. Like I've done, I mean, like I've just completed a big dungeon, like the first big dungeon of the game. So okay. I'm not very far in. It's like I just had my first kind of like boss fight kind of thing, right? And going through that dungeon, they do a very good job of introducing all of the different elements that you can echo, the you know, the items or enemies, and using them to good effect. I think my only, again, I'm very early in this game, my only criticism of Zelda so far is the controls are complex. Like when you get to there's a mechanic I think called binding.
Yeah.
Where you can kind of like, it's kind of like Breath of the Wild stuff where you can like take an inanimate object and move it. And there's just something about the buttons that you need to press to bind. And then like, even when they were showing it off, the naming, like binding and reverse bonding, which are the two names for these two different mechanics, it doesn't even make any sense why they would be called that when they're like so close to each other. And but you know, it looked complicated then, and in gameplay I'm finding at the moment the buttons to be a little bit complicated. But that is my only knock on this game. It is beautiful. There are moments where I really want to switch to because it's like frame rate struggling playing handheld. Yeah. But I can see why, because this is a stunningly good looking game. And that I think that Grezzo pushed this to the absolute limit. And it's just a ton of fun to play. Like I am making a very strong case that my wife needs to play this game too. Like she loved the other two Zeldas. And I think she will really enjoy this game because it's just the right amount of puzzles so far. I'm having a great time with it. I don't know if either of you have put more time into it than me, or if you have more to say.
I'm a little further than you.
Okay.
After the first dungeon, I completed the first dungeon, the first boss, and then I sort of started exploring before going to the second one. And what I think I'm appreciating about this game is that it's obviously been influenced by the open world Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom games, to the point where I think the biggest knock against it is actually the inventory management and how you, for example, the menu to switch between the different echoes is basically lifted just wholesale from how you switch between items in Breath of the Wild or things you can fuse, for example, in Tears of the Kingdom. It's just a long horizontal scrollable list of stuff that doesn't allow you to have like presets or favorites. Like it suffers from the same issues of like the more items you unlock, the more echoes you unlock, the longer the list becomes.
Is there a maximum?
I have no idea.
Right, because my concern is like I'm like 6 hours later in the video game and I've got to scroll through a list of 100 things. I don't know about that yet either, but
like your most frequently used echoes, they float toward the beginning of the list, which is handy. Mm-hmm. But I would have preferred, I don't know, like a grid view or just more controls. Just like in Tears of the Kingdom, really. Especially when you want to play around with different things that you want to fuse to your weapon.
Yeah.
It would have been useful to have a different UI for managing all those items. But maybe the other criticism that is not, I guess it's not actually a criticism, more of something that I want to follow up on later in the game, because I have a feeling that although you can unlock all sorts of echoes, some of them, whether they're objects or enemies, some of them are clearly superior to others. And so already I'm finding myself sort of gravitating toward a smaller subset of echoes, even though I have a larger collection, because some of them are obviously stronger and more flexible. So I wonder, and you know, given also the other abilities that you unlock, I wonder if, there's going to be all this freedom with all these echoes, but realistically, you're just going to use 5 of them by the end of the game. That is something that I want to check. Because I'm getting this feeling now, but I'm not sure if it's just because I'm early in the game or if it's actually an issue of the game. But otherwise, it's just so pleasant.
Yeah, like I still have the concern that we're so early. We've played this like a handful of hours. It's just come out. And I mean, I've watched some reviews and everyone's just like super glowing on it. So I'm expecting that my concerns aren't going to be a problem. But like, it's just an intrigue that I have of, am I going to be clever enough for this game, or am I going to be using trampolines for the next 6 hours? Like, I don't know.
Isn't that also the issue with Tears of the Kingdom, though?
Yeah.
Like you see what these other much more committed people can create in Tears of the Kingdom, and you're like, am I stupid for not being an engineer and coming up with a giant mecha or you know these crazy contraptions?
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, that didn't take away like my inability to create. It didn't take away from my enjoyment of Tears of the Kingdom, mm-hmm. and so I don't think it'll take away from Echoes of Wisdom either. I think what I appreciate most really right now is immediately from the first few puzzles, the game shows you how there are different approaches to solve the same puzzle.
Yeah.
Like you can use a trampoline, or you can stack a bunch of beds together. Like you can do almost whatever you want, obviously within the constraints of the game, which is something that is very different from, say, A Link to the Past, right? Or even Link's Awakening, which is Link's Awakening, the remake, is based on, you know, it's the same engine as this one, also made by the same developers at Grezzo. But in Link's Awakening, when you have a puzzle, there is one solution to that mm-hmm. puzzle. And Link's Awakening introduced like more freedom in terms of unlocking items and all that kind of stuff. But there was always one solution, one acceptable solution. Here, there's a bunch of different solutions, which is showing how Grezzo and Nintendo, obviously, they learned from Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. And I think it makes for an interesting mix of these two types of Zelda in an old school sort of vibe.
Yeah, I think it's a joy. Shahid, have you played this, or do you have any desire to play Echoes of Wisdom?
I was late to the party, and my copy doesn't actually arrive until tomorrow.
Okay. Because you're buying physical, man.
Yeah, I prefer physical. I make a point of getting as much stuff physically as I can. That said, I've been playing so many games lately, which is completely out of character, but I've had a fair bit of time in my hands.
Okay.
So I have actually had a lot of other stuff to play, and that's the only reason I haven't got around to playing it yet. I've been so fixated on half Astrobot, so that's PS5, and half Steam Deck, whatever. When we come to my bit later, I'll talk about something that'll make you and Federico laugh, which is, in essence, me looking at my Steam Deck going, maybe I could use something like one of those high-end PCs that Federico's banging on about.
We're all around him enough, you know? Like, this is just the way that it goes.
I am so sorry. I have infected you.
But you've done that to me for years. You know
yes.
that, right?
You are an influencer in the strictest sense of the word.
100%.
Which you just influence us all to do things. I just have a couple more games I want to mention, and then we can move into if you guys have more. Balatro is on Apple Arcade now, and also just on the iPhone and Android in general. I mean,
how is it?
Oh, it's perfect. Yesterday I sat down. I was like, let me see how it works. Played an entire round. It took half an hour. I got to the end. I died, I failed on the final hand round or whatever they call them. But I was wondering like, how's it going to work? You know, because I played it on Steam Deck, and I played it a lot with touch on Steam Deck. Not entirely, but you can play it with touch. So I knew that they had the mechanics down, but I wondered if some of the elements are too small for an iPhone screen. And they've done a very good job, I think, of adapting the controls, and so like some of the things that are buttons aren't buttons. So like you sometimes tap on a card and press another button to buy it. This time you just tap the card and you drag it to like an area that highlights on the screen, and like you drag it in that area and then you buy the card, for example. Straight up, this is one of the games of the year, like top three probably for me at least.
Wow.
This game rules. Like if for any reason you've missed out on Balatro, you have no excuse now. Like this is it's a fantastic game. It is a perfect mobile game. Like the only knock I have on it is you could only play it in landscape. But I actually think that might be a good thing. So if I could play this thing in portrait, I may never play another video game. Like, this might just be it for me. So, you know, I've said this before. Anyone that's listened to the show for long enough will know. Like, I pick a mobile game and I just play that game, like, all the time. So it was Threes. Then I had Finity, which is a game I've played and recommended a bunch. Recently, I've been playing Peglin a lot. Now it's going to go to Bellatro. So, like, if I'm ever just, like, want to play a game, like, I'm ever commuting anywhere or whatever, I'm just going to be playing Bellatro all the time. It's so good. Like, you have no excuse. Like, if you have Apple Arcade, you should definitely do this. But it's like $10. Like, and it is so worth it. Bravo, Apple, I will say, right? They did the thing. They made it work. They've done what I think is an unprecedented deal with the developers of Bellatro, where they can offer it paid and on Apple Arcade at the exact same time for a brand new game. So there are two versions. There's Bellatro, which you pay for. Bellatro Plus is on Apple Arcade. And I think they knew what they were doing here. Everyone's going to win on this one. And I hope that the developers took home a big check from Apple, because fantastic. Before Astrobot, I was still playing tons of Fields of Mystria. I cannot wait to see how this game develops over its early access period. It's so fantastic, so adorable, just a heartwarming, lovely game. It's like cozy in the way that a cozy game can be, but I think has some more complex mechanics, which I expect will unfold more as the game progresses. Like, you kind of just get a taste of it. And I can't wait to follow this game. I'm actually really excited about it in a way, because, you know, I love Stardew Valley, and I came to Stardew when it was done. But there have been people who've been playing it for years in early access. And I feel like I'm there with Fields of Mystria, where I've basically played pretty much all I can that is original content. And I would just start basically repeating some stuff. So I'll give it a little bit of time now, and I'll keep my eye out for when they have an update, and then I'll jump in and play what they got and keep going on from there. So
I tried Field of Mystria, and it made me realize that just this type of game is not for me.
It's not your speed, I don't think.
No, I also was never a Stardew person. Any game that makes me feel like I gotta get work done is, like, not the type of game I'm looking for.
Yeah. I 100%
But I
understand
the appeal.
Yeah.
And I understand the coziness of it. It's just, usually when I play games, I'm so tired that I want the opposite. Like, I want the power fantasy, you know? Instead of doing chores.
What it'd be the exact opposite of power fantasy, right? Like, I don't know what it'd be like. You know, like, power fantasy, like, I'm going to go destroy every monster. Or on the opposite side, let me do some farming. And, oh no, I forgot to take out the trash or whatever. You know what I mean? It's just like...
I got to have something to kill, you know? There's got to be an enemy. There's got to be... But I get it.
And these games, like Mystria and Stardew, they do have that, but it's not the core mechanic, right? Yeah. You still have to do all the other stuff. And if that stuff does not interest you... You're gonna have a not great time, but yeah, I really love it. I think it's fantastic. It's just a really good implementation of a game like this, a Stardew like, is the way that I think about it. Let me take a break, and then we'll move on, and we'll find out what else is going on with you guys, because I had a billion games to play, so I've monopolized the first half of the show. This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. If you're watching streaming services without using ExpressVPN, it's a little bit like playing your favorite video game and ignoring all of the power-ups. Why would you do this? This is where ExpressVPN comes in. When you use ExpressVPN, you can change your online location, which can change where streaming services think that you're located. They have almost 100 different server locations around the world, so you can discover thousands of new shows to watch on your favorite streaming services, like Netflix, Disney+, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, and more. There are tons of reasons to choose ExpressVPN over other VPNs. It's incredibly easy to use. You just fire up the app and click one button to change locations. For me, on my Mac, it's just in my menu bar, and I can hit it and I can change it. Even from the menu bar app, I can be like, no, say I'm in the UK, say I'm in the US, say I'm in Canada, or whatever. Like, for example, if I was to say that I was in Canada, I could watch The Godfather on Canadian Netflix. If I said I was in France, I could watch Sherlock. Or what about if you're outside of the UK, you could change your location to the UK, refresh Netflix, you could watch all of Friends. ExpressVPN has blazing fast speeds, so you can stream in HD with zero buffering, and it's compatible with all of your devices, from phones, laptops, smart TVs, and more. And ExpressVPN has the added benefit of encrypting your data so you can browse the web more securely. I use ExpressVPN a ton when I'm traveling. I actually just got back from traveling, and I wanted to continue watching a show that I was watching at home. So I was able to fire up ExpressVPN, change my location to the UK, refresh the streaming service I was using, and then I could continue watching it because the service thought that I was at home. Because when I opened it in the US, it was like, oh no, you can't have any of this content. So go make a smart choice and stop paying full price for streaming services while only getting an access to a fraction of the content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/remaster. That is expressvpn.com/remaster. Go there and get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. A thanks to ExpressVPN for the support of this show and all of Relay. So what have you been playing?
I've been playing a bunch of things. Been playing Astrobot. I am not as far into the game as you are.
Okay.
I've just been having a lovely time with
the music.
Astrobot.
I forgot to mention how incredible the music is.
So
for that
good.
Game.
So good.
Yeah.
I did some moving around of hardware in my apartment. Fun story. Just before Astrobot came out, I decided I'm not playing my PS5 enough, and I want to try an experiment. I'm going to take my PS5 to storage. I want to take it out of the apartment and see if I miss it. Because this console generation has been so weird, and there are so few PS5 exclusives that I wanted to play. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, unfortunately, didn't really click with me, although I want to try and get back to it because I think I had the wrong approach a few months ago. But I thought, let's just try this experiment. I'm not going to sell my PS5. I'm just going to remove it from the living room, bring it down to storage, and see if I miss it. 2 days later, I was like, well, Astrobot came out, and it seems excellent. I guess I'll take my PS5 again. But in doing that, I decided to do something different. I brought my PS5 and my Nintendo Switch, rather than in the living room, in my office. I have this gaming monitor that it's the Gigabyte M27U. It's a 4K 170Hz refresh rate gaming monitor that mostly I've been using for work. And I got it because I liked the fact that it had multiple inputs. I like an Apple Studio display. This thing has USB-C, a bunch of HDMI, DisplayPort. And I wasn't really using it. I only had the Legion Go going to this display in addition to the iPad. And I thought, let's just try something different. So I connected my PS5 and the Nintendo Switch dock. And I now understand why people enjoy playing video games for longer sessions on a gaming monitor. It's been excellent. Just being able to take a break from work and staying in the same spot but switching inputs to my PS5 allowed me to have this like shorter 30-minute sessions for Astrobot. And when it's that close to your face, like I'm sitting about, less than a meter away from my monitor, it's gorgeous. Like it's so nice to have a proper gaming monitor in front of you instead of sitting like 3-4 meters away from the TV. It's been excellent. And just the quick switching between, you know, let me get some work done and now let me play for 20, 30 minutes and then let me get back to work. It's been really nice. So I've been playing that in my office, and Astrobot also had me repurchase a device that I had previously sold, the PlayStation Portal. I still think the PlayStation Portal is flawed as a device and as a concept, but it's for a game like Astrobot, it's sort of the way I've been thinking about it is the PlayStation Portal doesn't need to exist except for Astrobot. It's the only game where you can play for short sessions before going to bed. So like, I don't want to get out of bed before going to sleep and go to my office to play Astrobot. I want to stream Astrobot. But when I stream Astrobot with the Steam Deck or with the Legion Go, I don't get the full experience, right? I don't get the haptics. Yes. I don't get the PlayStation layout. So the PS Portal as a streaming device that has the actual DualSense haptics, incredible for Astrobot.
Yeah, I heard you talking about this on NPC, and I got frustrated and jealous because, I mean, I got a Portal too, right? We spoke about it on the show, and it was a disaster for me. Like,
oh yeah,
and so I'm not willing to do what I know you did, which was separate of this, you had upgraded your Wi-Fi hardware.
Yep. That's what I did.
And I'm not willing
ago.
To do that for this, yeah. So I just got to let it go.
I'm having a decent time with the PlayStation Portal only because a few months ago I upgraded my Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, it was terrible before. Now it's, I got this really expensive router, and sure, it's got much better signal when I'm in the bedroom.
It's the one that you made me buy as well. Do you remember?
It's actually the one after that.
Oh no.
Shahid, it's been more than a month. Of course you bought a new one.
Oh yeah. God. What was I thinking? As soon as he said a few months, I should have known.
You should have known. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually got, it's in the same family of Asus routers, but
look,
it's
that doesn't
even,
help me, man.
Yeah.
It's an even bigger one with more antennas. It looks like a tank. It looks
I
like
hate
a,
these things.
Like a mix of a spider and a tank.
I respect the game, you know, like I respect what you're doing here, both of you. I cannot put one of these things in my house. I can't.
Oh,
I just can't bring myself
hidden.
To it.
But it's hidden from view. It's like inside a cabinet. I don't see it. Thank
yeah,
God.
I really need like the multi-port stuff, like the Eero, like is what I use, and my house really needs it. Like if I have one of those houses where like if my phone is downstairs and I go upstairs, my AirPods can cut out. Like, you know, it's one of those kind of scenarios. So I really need that like distributed network stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had that too. I just had some guy come in and I spent £1,500 on getting it done. So I'd wired absolutely everywhere.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, don't mention this to me because then I feel stupid that when we were getting our house renovated, I didn't have it wired. So like, I just don't need to hear about that. You know what I mean?
Oh, you can do it. You can do it later.
Yeah,
as long
that's
as
what
you
know. I did. It's
I know,
not my house.
It would have been so much easier to do it when we were decorating.
Oh,
right?
Well,
like,
yes.
Like, really, that's on me, right? To have not thought about that.
But you can still do it.
I know. And the other thing I can do, which I also don't want to do, is I can get more modern Eero stuff. Like, but that you know their newest stuff is always very expensive. I actually didn't get the newest. I think I have Wi-Fi 6 or 6E or something like that. I think I have 6. I think 6E was their new one when I bought my stuff, and now I know they have 7.
Yeah, which, now they're doing 7.
Yeah,
so.
Which I'm sure will be good. And so like one day, but really, all I need to hope is that in the meantime, PlayStation do what I actually want them to do and just make a handheld PlayStation.
I mean, yeah,
they're not going to do that.
I don't know, man.
On a
long timeline, I'm not sure anymore. Like, genuinely. Like, we'll see. Maybe PlayStation 6 generation. Maybe we get a handheld PlayStation 5.
Maybe.
You know? Like, that's kind of the timeline I'm thinking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it depends.
Yeah, a lot of people have to change before people repeat mistakes.
That's a good point.
They have had a lot of change, though.
They are going through some changes. Yeah, it's just, you know, Mark Cerny, he loves the big desktop console GPUs. And I don't know. I have a feeling that Mark Cerny doesn't really like handhelds. That's just my personal theory.
Yeah. But look, here's the thing, though, about PlayStation, right? They were on a path that I think has now changed, the live service path, right? We've seen, like, Concord was a disaster for them. Like, as disastrous a disaster as something like that could occur, which is so funny considering how much of a... Not funny, but it's a strange thing to consider, considering how well Helldivers did, right? That, like, they've had these absolute ends of the spectrum with games that, from a let's say architectural perspective, are similar, right? They're paid up front and they're online games, right? I know they're completely different, and like Helldivers was able to break through because it was different. The problem with Concord is like there's a bunch of games already like that and they're free, right? Like that's the issue. But there was a whole suite of these games, right? And there were projects that were being worked on by other teams. A bunch of those projects got cancelled. I don't know if we're going to see all of those games that they showed off. And also leadership has changed since then. So my thinking is, I'm not saying that is going to lead to a handheld PlayStation 5, but from my kind of read on it, they are a different company now than they were 2 years ago.
I also think the way I look at it is the 2025 combo of potentially a Nintendo Switch 2 early in the year and a portable Xbox later in 2025 is a scary thought for Sony, the way I look at it. Like, your two biggest competitors now having a new generation of handhelds potentially next year. where does that leave you? And that's not to mention the Steam Deck and all the other handhelds that people are buying, but especially the Steam Deck.
Yeah, but it's very different. Yeah, massively different. There's so many handhelds. That's the thing, right? The market is extremely fragmented. It's niche, and therefore it's high margin. It doesn't rely on volume because it takes software from existing sources. So you call the Switch a portable, and we've talked about this a million times. It's only, as I said at the beginning of the Switch when it came out, it's actually mobile hardware. It's marketed as a console. Later in its life, it will feel much more like a handheld, and they'll shift marketing because they'll want kids to buy it.
Yep.
It's what they did before with separate product lines. But all the magic of Switch was, of course, integrating those product lines and doing it in a very imaginative way. As for all the other handhelds, they're very much PC-based, so they already have a huge portfolio of software available to them across multiple subscription services and other platforms. Then you've got the retro scene with its billion handhelds there. And in terms of hardware, of course, Federico's the expert because he's got every single device ever made. The point is all fragmented. Actually. No, he probably does. I'm not even saying that jokingly, right?
No, I'm not joking.
And I'm not saying it mockingly because I'm jealous because I want those devices too. But it is very niche. So some of the manufacturers, like, for example, from the Ambernic school of thought, mm-hmm. have the same chipset across billions of devices, yeah. and they just experiment with form factors,
yep.
and with button layouts and pad layouts. But essentially, it's exactly the same hardware inside for an entire generation. And for them, they want to make a small amount of margin on these variations on the same hardware base. But it's not a huge market. It's just a sufficient market. They don't have to worry about the software because the software already exists. If Xbox were to come out with a portable now, I'd be really surprised because they got a lot of problems that have got absolutely nothing to do with them not having a portable device in the market. And having a portable device in the market, I think, will muddy the waters for them, confuse them in terms of strategy. How will having a portable device solve Microsoft's current problems with Xbox? I don't think that it will. I'm not saying that they won't do it. What I'm saying is, if I was running Xbox right now, well, first of all, I'd probably be facing the sack. But the second thing is, I would not be thinking about a handheld. I'd be thinking about how to make the best of all of these major acquisitions we've made in terms of publishing software houses and software acquisition and turning it into a steady stream of absolutely brilliant games coming in a steady cycle based on existing and old franchises, which they're not exploiting. And I would make sure that the existing franchises that we already hold on to, especially the Activision stuff, right, that continues to be my bread and butter. And if I'm at PlayStation, I'm going to say, I know what my audience is. My audience loves this type of game, that type of game, the type that we've always produced. We need to make sure that the same creators behind those games are incentivized to continue creating games of that kind, to hero the console in a way that nobody else has got the ability to do. That's how they made major inroads into the market and then established a dominating position with PS1 and PS2. That's what they completely forgot about with PS3 and decided to go off on some kind of bizarre technological worship
Vision
episode,
quest.
Right? I mean, come on. Like, so it's, and yet the funny thing is they were way ahead of their time because they came out with this chipset that was essential. Massively multi-parallel based on DSP style architecture, which eventually became the massively parallel core architecture of NVIDIA chips. I'm not saying the two are the same, but it's interesting that they had a major falling out with NVIDIA around the time of PS3 because it weren't delivered what they were expecting. And yet the SPU architecture was a forerunner of what NVIDIA went on to create. Now, I'm not saying one led to the other. I'm saying it's, for me, it's a bit like when Mark Zuckerberg left his partners because he knew what he had was really special and he didn't need his partners. He just wanted to go off on his own. And I think that's exactly what NVIDIA did. So they got distracted. With PS4, it was a return to roots. It was a return to a complete focus on simple, straightforward, easy to program hardware at a low cost, very accessible, really, really open for developers, exactly like the PS1 was. And that's why PS4 was a massive success. They had momentum going into the PS5 generation, which would be lost by PS6 if they don't correct the faults that they started to introduce, because they're beginning to get some of that same PS3 era hubris. And so for them, I think it would be a big mistake to try and compete in this incredibly crowded, incredibly fragmented, cutthroat, portable marketplace. We love portables, and we have this reverence for the old school portables as well. Kids like portables, but PlayStation has never gone after the kids. Nintendo has always been good at going after the kids.
Oh, now we have Astrobot, baby. Let's go, you know?
Right. But Astrobot is a second decent version of a VR-first game, whereas Nintendo are sitting on 40-plus years of heritage and dozens and dozens of iterations on that, plus multiple studios who have been dedicated to creating that kind of original content generation after generation after generation. They haven't chopped and changed. They've always produced magnificent software based on exactly the same principles that they used to create the first software that they ever made that was massively successful. I mean, my God, you can trace a game all the way back to Game & Watch. It's exactly the same kind of principle. That same fluid motion, that feeling of control that you get that no other manufacturer has nailed until now, finally, you know, like 40 plus years later, we can now say, oh yeah, Astrobot. If Odyssey is a 10 out of 10, then Astrobot's a 9.8 out of 10. And that's where I'd put it, right? It's that good. But it took a long time. Now the question is, do they have the stamina? Do they have the fortitude? Do they have the insight, the foresight to establish this as a franchise? And if they do, will it ever be as successful as Nintendo's Mario and all the other characters in the Mario universe? I don't know, because Astrobot plays on a whole bunch of Sony stuff that is not that personal. What they've had to do is inject the personality into icons and characters that previously didn't really have personality. That's the great thing that they've done, right? But it didn't start with personality. They added the personality in. They've got all the mechanics, of course they have. They have all of the feedback, all of the UI, all of the UX, all of the game design. Nintendo started with all of that. They started with personality. They started with the mechanics. And then it was really easy for them to expand that technically. Mm-hmm. They don't even have to go down the PlayStation route, you know, the technology route, to be able to continue to exploit that. So I think it would be a mistake for PlayStation to veer away from that focus. These large companies tend to fail when they think, oh, this isn't working. Got to try that. You know, games as a service. That's where everything's at. We got to try that. What happens?
I think that's what happened. They lose focus, they fail.
Exactly. Exactly what happened.
I agree with everything you're saying. And that was amazing. Thank you for that insight. I know you have the insight. I know you know what you're talking about. But the thing that I will ask you, do you think in a scenario, right, where, like where Federico pitched, Nintendo has the Switch, Microsoft release a handheld Xbox, and people like it. It might not blow up, but people like it. Do you imagine Sony will be able to sit there and just be okay with that? That, like, their two competitors have got handhelds and they're just going to sit and be fine?
Depends on two major factors. The first factor is leadership and culture.
Yeah.
If the leadership and culture is one of strategy, then no, they won't let that bother them. However, there is a second factor. And the second factor is unknown market success. So, for example, so Switch I would discount. The Nintendo is its own market.
Yeah.
I don't think PlayStation look at Nintendo as a competitor.
I don't think they look at them normally. But I mean, I just wonder if Microsoft enter the handheld world, does Sony feel like the odd man out in that scenario? Is what I wonder.
Yeah. So the second argument against the first argument. So the first argument, of course, is if they have strategic leadership. In other words, leadership that is driven by strategy and not by opportunity, then I don't think they'll make a handheld in response to anyone else. They'll make a handheld because they think it's the right thing to do strategically, right?
Yeah.
But the second thing that counts against that is unexpected market success. So if Microsoft were to release an Xbox Portable at some point next year, I don't know if they will or they won't, but if they do, we have to think about the technology. What technology will they use? They'll probably use some of the Qualcomm stuff, right? It'll probably be ARM-based because they'll want the same sort of power that these latest Windows series of laptops are getting to try and compete with the ARM stuff that you get in the latest Macs, right? The M series of chips. So they'll be looking at that and thinking, do we need to get that line of chip in-house somehow or to get supply on that? Because, of course, component supply at scale becomes a huge issue when you're trying to build these devices. And you have to nail that years in advance. So they wouldn't do it in response because they couldn't. Because to get those supply lines set up takes years. Because we're talking about at scale. These smaller manufacturers don't need cutting-edge chips, don't need to time the market, don't need to muck about with currency fluctuations. My goodness, one of the things I learned when I was in the presence of some of these top execs at PlayStation was just how difficult it is to run a global supply chain in the face of all kinds of insults to the business. Like, for example, there's some kind of earthquake in Japan and it affects chip production, or there's a hurricane in Taiwan, affects chip production, or currency gets affected. Now you've got to play in financial markets to try and get your logistics tight enough that you can actually make money instead of lose money. So my point is, I mean, I know it sounds like I'm beating around the bush, but it's a huge issue. You can't just say, okay, Xbox have been successful with this portable. We've got to do one as well, because you're 2 years too late at that point. And even if they do, and I'm not saying Xbox will do it, even if they do, Xbox would have to be hugely successful with it. And if they were, and if they're using the chips that are currently available, or that will be coming down the pipe in a year or two, then they'll have to iterate fast. And by iterating fast, of course, they lose some of the benefits of mass production. And certainly for PlayStation, they've relied upon them not having to do cycles more often than once every 4 or 5 years. So the whole thing is that the whole model of the console industry is based on long life cycles. If you're doing a portable,
I think this one's going to be long too. Like I think we're going to be pretty long. Yeah, there's just enough games. Yeah.
It's not just that, Mike. I mean, it's like the console's good enough, man.
Yes.
What more do you need?
I mean, they
consoles
have the
are good enough. People have got good enough infrastructure now as well.
If people want that, they have that. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel like a necessity. But yeah, all right. That definitely makes sense. I wonder where, you know, saying about like the timeline stuff, we're seeing that in gaming in general right now, right? Like, and this is one of the biggest issues, I think, in the gaming space. And it is shown by like the struggle, I guess, that PlayStation have had at certain points this year, where you make decisions a really long time ago and you have to hope that the market is going to be the same when you come back around again. And I think that has not, I mean, it's not just PlayStation, there are tons of companies, right? They make a bet on a live service game or whatever, and it just doesn't pan out because the game took like 5 years to make. Like, look at Suicide Squad as well, right? Like a similar kind of idea.
So, you know, one of the things that people have missed, one of the biggest changes in video games over the last 40 years is that in the old days, you would ship a piece of hardware and it would last anywhere from 5 to 10 years. Games, meanwhile, took 6 to 12 months to make. Yeah. Now, games take longer than a hardware cycle to make.
Which is, that is a significant
problem.
It's
unsustainable.
Yep. And that's, I mean, and this is why there is more AI in games. And I think that this is the thing, like, it's kind of funny, really, right? Where like AI in gaming is somewhat different, I think, to a lot of the stuff that we've been seeing, right? So like, I think a lot of like the AI enhanced graphical stuff, I think might help, but I don't know. I don't know enough about it. But yeah, I don't know where we're going, but it's a strange thing. But anyway, Federico, what other video games have you been playing?
So yeah, anyway.
Anyway. Anyway.
So, yeah, sorry
so
about
that's that.
That.
No, I wanted thoughts. Your opinion on it, and I'm very happy that we have it. Because that is the level of insight that you don't get anywhere else. So I wanted it.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the PlayStation Vita. No, I just wanted to mention. So Astrobot, we've talked about Echoes of Wisdom. We talked about I'm still playing through and taking my time, as I mentioned before, Dragon Quest XI. It's a sort of game that you play. When I first heard my co-host on my other show, NPC Brendan, say it's a game that I played over the course of a year, I thought, oh, come on, over the course of a year? And no, now I get it. Like, it's a game that you can play totally fine in chunks, like over the course of multiple months. It's like a fairy tale that you dip in and out of, and it's great. So I'm still working my way through that. I'm at 70 hours and absolutely loving it. And the other game I wanted to mention is UFO 50.
Okay.
So this game, so I haven't really done a lot of reading about the backstory, but the idea is that it's a game that contains 50 other games. And it was mainly created by Spelunky creator Derek Yu in collaboration with other indie developers. Yep. And the idea is that they created this fictional company from the 80s, UFO Software, I want to say?
UFO Soft.
They created this fictional company, and in the fiction of the game, you bump into this sort of storage unit that contains a old UFO Soft console with this collection of 50 games. And these are like, imagine games that share the same graphical sensibilities and limitations of a NES. It's that style, 8-bit gaming. And all these games, they're not mini games. So this was my big misunderstanding about this game. I thought this was going to be a WarioWare-like affair. Like, yeah. Oh, it's 50 mini games that you cycle through. No. These are 50 full-on indie games in a single package. And it was a hard game for me to get into. I uninstalled this game twice on my Steam Deck. And the third time, after watching Brendan's video on YouTube,
yeah.
And sort of, I understood that I was starting with the first game in the collection. All of the games are immediately unlocked. You can just select them from a grid. And there's this cute animation when you pick up a cartridge, you just sort of blow the dust off of it. Very cute. But you can start anywhere. I was starting with the first one in the grid. And the first one, Barbuta, it's called, it didn't really resonate with me. And so I was like, I'm going to try it. Ooh, this game I don't like. Is it going to be like, are the rest of these games going to be like this one? Uninstall. And then I was like, oh, why is everybody raving about this game? Am I stupid? So I tried it again, started from the first game. Was like, nope, I really don't like this. Then I watched the video and I understood that first game is probably one of the less strong ones in this collection. Try that, but then try these other games first and then go back through the list in chronological order. And that did it for me. There are so many different types of games. There's one in particular, Shahid, that is going to be totally for you. It's a combination of like a strategy game and an idle clicking game. It's called Pilot Quest. It is incredible and so fun and addictive in a good way. There's platformers, there's Metroidvania games, there's old school shooters, there's Endless Runners, there's all kinds of games created by these indie developers coming together. And there's like even like a meta narrative throughout all these games that you can discover progressively as you play more and more. But these are full games. These are like the Metroidvania, like, is actually, it's got a giant map. So imagine 50 games in the package of a single game. And I don't know, it's perfect for a handheld, obviously. I think it's on the Nintendo Switch. I've been playing on the Steam Deck. It's perfect on the deck. I have my favorites. You can mark your game, the games that you like best, as favorites. So that's useful. And I've played almost half of them. These are 50 games, and it's so strange and different, and like an exercise in just masterful design of great mechanics within certain graphical limitations. It immediately went to the top five of my games of the year. It's an incredible achievement. So much fun. Doesn't make a great first impression if you start with the first game in the list. I recommend watching Brendan's video on YouTube and review on YouTube as sort of like almost as a guide to make you realize that you're not stupid. You just need to spend more time trying other games.
Yeah, this is a game that I'd heard of, and like I was aware that it was in development. I think there was a podcast that I was listening to at some point a while back, and it was when I first heard reference of this thing, of like someone wanting it to appear, and like was joking about like if it would actually ever be done, because it was, this has taken apparently a really, really long time to come together for obvious reasons. And then I saw Brendan's video, and I watched Brendan's video already too, and that was where I was like, oh, I think that I wanna play this. It's a very strange idea, but I kind of love that in a way.
Yeah, very strange, and for that reason, it's worth playing.
Shahid, I see in our notes that you've played this game.
I've played a lot of games. I'm not going to talk about Astrobot.
Okay.
Because I will echo everything you said.
Yeah.
And I covered my other opinions about it, of which I had many. But yes, I did play UFO 50. And I'm not sure what I want to say about it at this point.
Okay.
Other than, while I respect the endeavor, I have played through every single game. I haven't finished every single game, obviously, but I've tried every single game. And it feels like it's coming from a place of love, but because I'm so attached to that time, I feel like it misses in one area. And I don't want to be critical, because I love Derek. I mean, you know, I signed Spelunky back in the day, get it onto Vita. I love his work. And these games are clearly a labor of love, because you can tell individually each one of these is a game in its own right, and not many games. But here's the one thing, if I was going to make a tiny little criticism, it would be this. One of the brilliant things about that era, the whole 82 to 89 era, when obviously I knew how to program and was programming, was the way developers would work around the limitations of the architecture to create sometimes quite astonishing results. That seems to have been missed. I'll give you one small example. Like in the very first game, the player character just blanks out when he dies. We didn't do that. Okay. I mean, that feels like a little slap in the face. The collision box is huge. Yes, some of the worst games of that time had bad collision, but we had some excellent collision as well, using some quite amazing techniques. So you had these games that looked and felt like they came from the 80s, but suddenly there would be like one technical breakthrough that made them really special, that made them feel like they were ahead of their time. And there were enough games from that period of time that I felt needed more exposure in this. Mm. Whereas I think what happened was that there's an embrace in this collection of one particular aesthetic, slightly increased in terms of, I guess, complexity from 82 to 89 in the collection, an almost Hudson Soft feel to the games, a very similar looking style throughout, which I know was a goal, but more of a fixation on console-like games, but with some clear limits that weren't always there in the games that we played from that time, and completely missing out on some of the magic of the ZX Spectrum, of the Commodore 64, and of the Amiga. Now, this is a terrible, terrible, terrible criticism to make, simply because that's too much to do for 50 games.
Yeah.
So all the things I've talked about would work. But I feel like, you know, I bought this game straight away. I feel like I might have been the intended audience, but maybe not.
I don't think I'm not the intended audience.
Okay, so maybe I'm not. So what I'm thinking is, if you're trying to represent that, I take your point. Okay, so maybe I'm the secondary market, and I will give you that point. It's tenuous, my argument, but I would say, I feel It's really weird, this, right? Because I feel so personally attached to that time. I feel like our era has been slightly misrepresented.
Yes.
And if it's going to be presented to people outside my audience, then show the best. And in terms of gameplay, I would say it's there. It's nailed it. And it's the quality is more consistent than the games that we produced throughout that era, clearly, because these people know how to make games. But I would say in terms of some of the tricks, some of the aesthetics, some of the graphics, some of the stylistic differences, some of the technical differences, I feel like that didn't come across, and that's what gave them their magic. It was almost a sense of the games of the time felt like they were breaking out of their boxes, and I didn't get a sense of that in anything I played. Not one of the 50 games achieved that. They all felt like they were in that box. And sometimes the box was turned into a pastiche. Like, for example, with the first game from the 1982 era, when the character lands, it pauses for a beat before you can move. We didn't do that. We had fluid movement in the 80s. Sprites moved smoothly, even in 82. So you even had the Commodore 64 back then. So by then, we did have smooth movement. And even on the Spectrum, we had smooth movement. So my point is not that the games are bad. The games are good. My point is there's an element of magic that I wish they could have captured that would have conveyed the spirit of that time in a much more exciting way. And I think what they did instead, which is perfectly commendable, is that they focused on the gameplay and to present a variety of that through some kind of notional device that might have existed. So it's an alternative parallel history, but it's a slightly safe history in terms of technology and mechanics, but it's not safe in terms of gameplay. It's solid in terms of gameplay.
Shahid, I need you to know that I love you. You're the best. Look, this is me, my thought on what you're saying here, taken as someone who did not make games then and has not played this one yet. My feeling is, when I said you weren't the intended market, I think people of my age and people of your age are. There's not a huge difference between us, but like it's the case of like, were you a kid or were you a teen, right, at that time? Yeah. The difference is you made the games. That's, I think, the issue, right?
I feel like listening to Shahid, well, first of all, there's nobody else who could have had this sort of criticism.
Yeah.
But it made me think of an analogy. It's like the younger kids these days who are sort of missing and being fascinated by the Nokia phones. And I look at that trend and I'm like, buddy, I had those phones and they were terrible. I absolutely have no nostalgia for those things.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that.
You lived it. Right. So like you are so much closer to this than the people that played it. Right.
To you, this feels like an approximation of what it was.
It is an approximation, but and I feel it's a legitimate approximation, but I feel there's a missed opportunity. So the way I look at it almost is, would they have gained anything by adding this degree of authenticity and clarity about the spirit of that era? I don't know if they would have gained anything by doing that.
Probably not.
My grievance, okay? My pain is that, oh, buddy, that was not the best of us. That's not what we were going for.
This is your era. This is your thing. You were there then doing the best work. So, like, of course, I understand completely that you just want your era to be remembered accurately.
Right. Right?
Where that things, you know, because you don't want too many of these types of projects to exist over the time, which then misrepresents that, like, oh, really, only Super Mario Bros. Is the only good game. You know what I mean? Like, that's not accurate for that time period. But it is the kind of warped version of history that could happen. Because I think my expectation is what they are emulating is what more of what was available at that time, right? Which were games that weren't made with the level of quality that you were making games at and that some of your compatriots are making games at, but maybe more of the like movie tie-in game that was like impossible to beat, right? Like, I maybe they're trying to emulate a little bit more of that kind of mentality. I don't know.
No, I think they're going after good quality games.
Yeah.
And the gameplay takes priority over the spirit of the times.
Sure. Yeah.
And they've approximated the spirit of the times. The spirit of the times was not about technical limitation, because for the creators of that generation, these were not technical limitations. They were opportunities of expression that nobody in history had ever had access to before.
Mm-hmm.
And the joy was in breaking what people saw as limitations and presenting people with magical levels of surprise. For example, the ZX Spectrum didn't have sprites, right? Everything had to be done in software. But if you wanted to do an entire screen update, you couldn't do it quickly enough so that you could refresh at 50 frames per second on a British Spectrum. It would take a lot longer. So you could only do partial refreshes. So people had to resort to all kinds of tricks, incredible tricks, in order to give the illusion that things were a lot smoother. And they did. There was a game, for example, it wasn't a very good game. It was actually a kind of a clone, 1983, maybe 1984, I think 83, called Technician Ted. It was based on Jet Set Willy. It was on the Spectrum. But those sprites moved incredibly smoothly, and there was pixel-perfect collision detection. There was sound when the character died. You know, so all of this stuff happened, and it was the breaking of the illusion that this machine is limited that is what made games so special. There's another incredible game of that period called Eurydium, made by Andrew Braybrook, the same guy who made Paradroid, an iconic game, right? Eurydium was ridiculously smooth, ridiculously fast, looked beautiful, had a level of visual quality that people are still copying today. People are making shooters today and trying to copy that look. Had a fluidity of movement. None of that was captured in any of these games. And I think the reason for that is there's a particular focus around some imaginary device.
Yes.
And that imaginary device hardware, it's almost like someone decided, you know what, and this is a little unkind, I don't mean this entirely, I'm using this by way of analogy. It's almost as if people got together and said, what if you made 50 Pico 8 games? You know the virtual console, the Pico 8 console?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so people got together and go, let's make a series of 50 Pico 8 games. So they've decided to target this. What's happened here is they've created another imaginary console, and they've slightly increased the complexity of the games as the years go on from 82 to 89. But they haven't captured the variety. I mean, there's quite a sweep. We're talking about Spectrum with color attribute clash, and I'm kind of glad they didn't reproduce that, because some limitations don't need to be reproduced. They were just clearly really bad limitations, right? So you've got from the Spectrum, but you got all the way up to the Amiga, which looked way, way better in 89 than any of the games in this collection do, even the ones in 89. So you had Turrican, for example, Turrican 2, which came out in, 86, 87? I mean, it was mid to late 80s, and it looked incredible. In fact, it was a Metroidvania before Metroidvanias. And if I could play Turrican 2 today, and it looked the same, there was, for example, a Turrican 4, I would play it. In the same way that, you remember Proteus came out recently, that boomer shooter PC game? They had a mode in it, right, where you could upgrade the graphics. And to be honest, the game didn't gain that much from upgrading the graphics. It still felt great to play. So I'm not knocking this collection for not having the best graphics. What I'm saying is the magic of those times wasn't gameplay. Gameplay has been a constant from the early 80s, late 70s even, all the way to now, and always will be. It's not just a constant, it's a fundamental. And it will obviously keep having slight improvements. What did change massively from 82 to 89 was technology. And what grew in line and sometimes in surprising bursts ahead of that curve in that accelerating growth of technological capability was the ingenuity of brilliant developers. And I'm not talking about me. I'm a journeyman. I say that quite openly time and time again. But I'm probably one of the better documenters of that time and storytellers of that time, because I feel the spirit of that time so profoundly. It was kids breaking the limits, surprising and shocking people with what was possible, with what they at the time perceived as limited devices. And for that not to be captured, I think is a missed opportunity, and not necessarily the market that Derek was going after. So this is not a blame on him. This is more a sense of me thinking, oh my God, I wish there was another parallel collection made by somebody else that captured that element of the spirit more accurately. So that I know I've kind of...
Nothing like a good existential crisis, you know?
It's not an existential crisis
I'm kidding.
No. I mean, well, maybe it is. Look, I'm going to be 60 in a year and a quarter, right? So I've lived through the most exciting technological changes in the history of our planet.
Yeah.
And most of them being centered around the joy of video games, because video games as a technology have been at the forefront of exploitation of computing and graphical hardware, which has now taken over the world, right? Mm-hmm. Everything happens with computers. That device we all carry around us all the time, that we do everything on, including playing games, all came from this kind of exploitation of the limits of that technology. That's what happened in that era. That's what I think is really, really important to get across. And that's what I think we don't have anymore today. People miss that. Why do I like Astrobot? Why do you like Astrobot? I'll tell you why. Because you start it up, you get into it straight away, and you start having fun straight away.
Yeah.
And although the technology behind it is incredible, it's the way that technology is in service to the feeling that the game gives you without any pauses, without any interruptions, without any break to the flow. That's what creates magic. And yeah, people have lost that.
You know, it's interesting you say that, like, because I noticed this with the new Zelda game too. You immediately get into action. And there is something that is so good about that, but it is nostalgic in a way, right? Where, like, the earlier video games, it wasn't like, all right, you ready for your 2-hour tutorial? Yeah. It was just like, no, you're just starting this video game. Like, you're going to get it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right? And like, that, if you can build a game that is that intuitive and that fun, you have something special in the way that these games worked initially. Like, video gaming had to grab people more then, right? Because it wasn't so much of, I guess, a cultural norm. That, like, when people picked up the Nintendo or the ZX Spectrum or the Commodore 64 or whatever, they had to, like, immediately grab it. Like, the Wii had that, right, too. Right? The reason the Wii was so successful is people could just... They understood immediately how to play bowling, right?
Like, yeah.
And that really worked for people. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from. Like, I'm ribbing you a little bit just because I think it's, you know... because we're all friends here. But like, I totally understand why, as you said already, like, you specifically would have a strong, not negative, but a strong reaction to this game, because it is immediately coming for your time and telling an alternate history, right? Which is kind of fascinating in its own way, but it's complicated.
Yeah, and fair dues to him. And look, let me give you one piece of positive spin on this. Something that I loved about this was how quickly you could get into every single thing. As Federico said, every single game is unlocked to begin
with.
I loved that. I loved that I could go through the entire lot. The interface is delightful. You know, it's a really beautiful, stripped down, easy to use interface. You can get into games really quickly. You can get out of games really quickly. The UI is consistent. The UX is consistent. You know, everything feels and responds naturally and quickly. So in that respect, they've nailed it. That's a beautiful thing, and they should be praised for that. So, you know, it's not that I felt negative about the games themselves or the way the whole thing was put together. It's just that I would like a different version, perhaps made by somebody who understands those points and gets those across. but not because I think it'd be a market success, but mostly because I think this is a historical retelling, right? It's a representation of where we all came from. You know, where did this industry start? And I'll tell you this for free. I'm only saying this because there are so many games today that miss a point, and some of the ones that I've played recently. So, for example, I wanted to play Call of Duty with my friends and family recently, you know, local multiplayer. Had my daughter over. We had a little bit of time to play, 40 minutes to be precise. We could not get a local split screen game going in 40 minutes because updates, downloads, login, passwords, and the UI was absolutely impenetrable. It was a joke. I thought, seriously, you spent a fortune in this, you completely missed the point of video games. The point of video games is for people to be able to get in, have fun, because they don't have time, right? We have less and less time than ever. If you disrespect my time, then frankly, you can burn, you can crash and burn for all I care, but they won't, because there's so much momentum and because everyone wants to play the online multiplayer version. But, you know, 40 minutes lost, game opportunity lost. In the end, the really funny thing is, I had to go back to the original version of Modern Warfare, the remastered version, to enjoy split screen with my daughter. And that required a download as well. Every time you turn on a console, mostly the Xbox, because I don't seem to get this with the PS5, the thing needs an update. And then you need a controller update. And the controller update takes longer than the console update, even though you've got 900 megabits down and up, right? That kind of thing just drives me up the wall. Thankfully, UFO 50 didn't have any of those things. It's beautifully accessible, and I'd much rather play that as a result. So I ended up playing more games on PC and on the Steam Deck than I did on Xbox, even though I really wanted to play a Game Pass game. But in the spirit of not wanting to needlessly criticize something just for the sake of it, because we've never really been a show like that, let me just say that I did play Fallout 4 in the Game Pass, and it's the first time I've ever played it. I haven't finished it, but I really, really enjoyed it. And boy, was I pleased that it was available for free in Game Pass. Well, obviously not for free, but, you know, it comes with Game Pass. I've never really been into that kind of thing. I thought, oh, let's check it out. And I was loving it. It was really great to have this story-based experience again, you know, written well, nice game, enjoyed that. Played a few other things as well, but I think that was... that's my rant. I've spoken plenty today. I know I usually don't say an awful lot, but today I had a lot on my chest.
Here's the thing, though. You know, sometimes we get 5 minutes of Shahid. Sometimes we get six. But it's all waiting for when we get that 30, you know? That's when the magic happens, you know? We can't use you all at once, right, in every episode. That's not how it works. We've got to bank it up. Before we finish today, I just want to mention September marks Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. For the sixth consecutive year, the Relay community is uniting to support St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. St. Jude's mission is to make sure that no child loses their life to cancer, no matter where they live, and they need our help to drive that mission forward. The Relay community has shown so much generosity over the last 6 years for this amazing cause, and we would love your support again to support the life-saving work of St. Jude. Please go to stjude.org/relay, where you can learn more and make a donation today. That is stjude.org/relay.